Iris Hobby, Reel 3. Yes, you were telling me about the very bad conditions that the farm workers lived.
Yes.
And, you know, the tide cottage you explained, yes, Iris.
Because they didn't have any main drainage, of course, and it was generally well water. In fact, underneath some of the sinks, they just used to have a bucket to collect their wastewater from a sink. And, I mean, the cottages really were disgraceful, what some of them had to put up with, but they generally had a lot of children because they didn't have much else to do when they got home, I suppose, I don't know, at night, you know. And they generally had a lot of children, and, of course, they didn't dare upset the farmer in any way, else they could be turned out. Yes, the conditions for farm workers were not good at all. In fact, on some farms, the cows, or animals, generally speaking, were better looked after than the people who worked on them.
Well, thank you very much. You know, that was very interesting to know.
Yeah.
And here you are on this big farm.
Yes, a farm.
Yes, and your duties, were they much the same
very
as the
very
other place?
Yes, very much the same. And there was a farm bailiff who was a manager who was in charge of it all. He wasn't a particularly nice person, but he was in a tight house as well, you see. But anyway, I worked with the head cowman, and then he was very ill. And I worked completely on my own in those sheds for 3 months. I hadn't had any time off at all. And I had to clean out the bull's pen. He was on his own, he was one bull in the pen, and I had to get in there and clean him out on my own. And there was nobody else there but me, because the farm bailiff used to be out in the fields or doing other things. And I used to have to clean him out every day on my own, which was very much against the law. But I did it because I was just trying to prove it to these things. I was that sort of a person. But I will quickly tell you this. When I went into the Land Army, I took my ukulele and my mouth organ. And when I was on my own in that cowshed, I used to play my mouth organ and sing the song with my ukulele, because I was sure they'd let their milk down better in the milking machines. And one day I forgot that I hadn't gone and changed the churn, and all the milk had come over the top, all in the dairy, and I rushed there, and I had to quickly clean it all up, and I expect in these days some people would have added water to it, or even in those days, when I wouldn't dream of doing anything like that. I told the farm bailiff what had happened, and I was in real trouble, and I think he got so much off my little bit of wages or something. But I was completely on my own for 3 months, because the other girl, she was a tractor driver and she was out in the fields.
How many cows would you have looked after then, do you think, roughly?
I think there was about 60 there, 60 milking cows there.
And the bull?
And the bull, yeah. 60 milking cows. Very nice sheds they had actually there. Anyway, when the head cowman came back, one day we were told that we were having Canadian soldiers were coming out to help with the harvest, and they came out and they worked very, very hard, but they all brought their rifles with them, and they were all having rifle practice. They were shooting at everything, including the water troughs, and they made holes for them. So they weren't allowed to bring their rifles anymore. But then we also had Italian prisoners of war. And while I was alone on that farm, it wasn't that farm, it was the first one. I'm sorry about that. We had Italian prisoners of war. No, we didn't. No, we haven't come to that. Sorry, we haven't come to the Italian prison. Well, it was the Canadians came out and helped us. But they worked very, very hard, the Canadian soldiers, very hard. And they got the harvest in for us, you know, very, very well, helping us. And the Naffy lorry came out to serve teas to them, but we were not allowed to buy a cup off them because we were not in the fighting forces. And so they were absolutely disgusted that the Native soldiers used to buy us a cup and give it to us. They just couldn't believe this. And they used to come out with peanut sandwiches with jam in them. And they used to give us their peanut and jam sandwiches. And so I was there for a year, but it was miles from anywhere. And also while I was there, also English soldiers came out, and one of them had got a piano accordion. And he said that in his barracks, it was getting knocked about. Would I look after this piano accordion for him? And he said, if I liked, I could play it. Well, I'd always played the piano by own thing, so I cycled to Farnham, where I'd seen a music shop, and I found a book which was Teach Yourself to Play the Piano Accordion. You see. So I taught myself to play his piano accordion. Yeah. I used to quite enjoy it, so I played that for the council.
Did you ever try it on the bull?
No, I didn't try it on the bull, no.
But, at this stage, did you have any, here you were, a young girl, with all these sort of men, the Canadians and the farm workers and, various other groups you've described. Did you ever suffer sexual harassment from any of these groups?
Not really. Not there, I didn't. Mm.
You know, these soldiers going through that wood as well in the first farm.
No, they were always so drunk they couldn't have done much anyway. No, I didn't have any sexual harassment at all. Not for harassment, not from the Canadians, not from the Irish. I mean, they were always very drunk. They used to chat us up. Yes, of course they did. In fact, I got quite friendly with one or two of them, you know. But we weren't really sexually harassed. No, harassed.
Nor the farmers, none of the farm workers.
This film, of course, I mean, the girls all share the bed of the farm worker's son. Well, that was a lot of rubbish, because all the farm worker's sons were in the army anyway, or in the forces. That's why we were there. Because their sons were working on the farm, and I mean, one of the farmers, he didn't have any teeth. I didn't fancy any of the farmers, actually, or any of the farm workers, not at all. Not really. No. Yeah. So anyway, after I was there a year, I decided that it was a bit off the beaten track. I mean, they used to have dances and things down at Farnham, but I'd always got to come back on my own. And this is when I started to hate bats and hate the moon, because the moon would be shining through the trees, and I was always quite sure somebody could see me. But I used to run for my life. And you used to get bats swooping down, and there was all these stories about them getting in your hair and things. And I love all animals. All animals, birds, but I do not like bats for that reason, really. But anyway, after a year, I decided that I would like a change again. Perhaps I would gain more experience or something. And so I once again phoned up the headquarters at Surrey, and then I had a letter to say that I could be transferred to a place called Pyrford, Pyrford. Near Byfleet, which is still Surrey, and I was in a private billet there, which I likened to Colditz, in actual fact, because the lady, she was much older than her husband. She had been a head nanny in private service. And they had married her off to the young footman. And they had bought her this house, where I was going to be visiting. And his name was Harry. And she used to say, "Get my coffee, Harry. Get my supper, Harry." toast was what Harry had got me for my breakfast, was two pieces of toast that was stuck on top of the kitchen range to keep it warm for when I came home for my breakfast. That was my breakfast. And she used to get me to play the piano to her. They had a piano, which I did. But I used to have to, I mean, I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. I said to her one day, are you running a concentration camp or something? So she said, right, you can find somewhere else to lodge. And I went next door to the lady next door who didn't like this old lady. She didn't particularly like me, but she didn't like this old lady. Well, of course, in those days it was the fashion for girls to wear cami knickers. And I washed my cami knickers, and this person said to me, you're not going to have those on my line. I knew you wouldn't be any good, but I knew you were born in London. And I was so innocent, it was unbelievable, you know. And so I wasn't allowed to hang my cami knickers, in case her husband took a fancy to them, I suppose. I don't know. But anyway, I decided I wanted to get into a hostel, because there was a hostel down the road where all Langos were in there, and they had a person in charge of them, and they were, you know, they were picked up and taken out to dances and things. And so I decided I wanted to go and stay in a hostel. I had enough billets. So I then phoned up, I went to the phone box to phone up the head office again, who was all the way at Guildford, and said, who is my representative? Have I got one? And they said, well, yes, she's a Miss So-and-so. Have you never seen her? I said, no. So they said, well, we'll instruct her to come and see you. Which she did. She came out on one of these sit-up-and-beg bikes, and I swear she was 90. Mm-hmm. She said to me, now, what do you want to see me for? I said, well, I haven't seen you, and I thought, perhaps I should. She said, well, for what reason? So I said, well, I would really like to now come out of private billets and go into a hostel with other girls. So she said, well, what do you want to go into with other girls? So I said, well, it's not very nice being in a private billet on my own where they are old. I work with an old man that really is an old man, you know. And I said, I would like to be at least billeted with young girls. She said, they're not nice girls. You don't want to be there with those, they're rough. I'm not going to let you go with those rough girls. She said, you don't want to be with those two. I said, yes, I do. So she said, but you're not going to be. I'm sorry, no, the answer's no. Yeah. So I had to stay in a private billet. Well, then I heard that there was a cottage that belonged to the farmer, that he said I could have that cottage. And next to it was another cottage where the girl's husband had worked on the farm. He was an Irishman, in actual fact. He joined the Irish Guards, and he was now a prisoner of war in Italy. And so I had this cottage to myself, and I had, then again, I had oil lamps and candles and no modern clothes at all. But at least I was able to look after myself and things, you see. And I used to be able to get, although you were rationed, you see, but I did used to be able to get some eggs from the farm, and occasionally somebody would sell me a cheap rabbit, ever so cheap, for a few pence, you know, and I really did feed myself quite well, actually. Mm.
Were you then given your free milk?
Yes, I got milk there, yes, at that farm, definitely. But it was while I was there that the prisoners of war came, the Italians, and the man that I worked with, the head cowman, he used to go out in the fields to work during the day, and I used to be left on my own on that farm. There were only about 30 cows, I think, not so many though. And I used to be left on my own. The moment he'd finished milking, he would go and have his breakfast and go and work on the farm. Incidentally, I will just quickly tell you this, he used to, one of the cows was bullying, or two of the cows, and the bull had got to service them, he wouldn't give him any food, because he used to say he would perform better if he didn't eat too much. And on the quiet, I used to give them extra, because I used to think they needed extra food, not less. Well, then he wouldn't perform. And he used to swear at me and say, you've been feeding that bull. And I remember, I said, how would you like to do after you've been starved. And he used to swear at me in his back. So I didn't fancy him, definitely not. But I can remember I used to hear shed doors opening, creaking, and it was these Italian prisoners war used to come behind him. And they really did give me a lot of sexual harassment. And I used to carry a fork around with me permanently and swear I would stab them. I'd say, get off. I would have done. I would have, you know, I would have attacked them with the fork. And one of them one day said he'd made me a ring. Mies, for you. And he'd made it out of something. And then afterwards I said, well, thank you very much. He said, one piece, Mies. I said, get out. And then I heard this girl who's husband was a prisoner in Italy. He lived in the concentration. I heard her screaming, and I went in there, and one of these Italian prisoners of war was attacking her. And so I went at him with a fork. She'd been trying to tell him that her husband was a prisoner of war, you see, and he didn't really know what she was talking about, and so he attacked her in the dairy, and it was in the dairy, actually. And so they apparently were a bad lot of Italian prisoners of war. They should never have come to the farm. And they had a civilian with just a rifle looking after them who was never there. He was always missing. But the local people used to send their children out to go and play with these Italian prisoners of war because they used to have cook-ups with great big lumps of bread and used to give them, share them with the children because they're very fond of children. And so the children used to be singing with them, but they didn't do any work, never did any work. And they all carried photographs of Mussolini around with him, with them. And then I think Mussolini committed suicide, and did he commit suicide? I can't remember, or was he hanged? I can't remember, I think he might have been hanged. And they all jumped on him in the puddles with his photos. They all threw their photos and said him no good and all jumped on him. Well, then they sent out some more who were such a bad lot, and they worked quite well. And one of them, his name was Al Berry, A-L-B-E-R-I, and he used to follow me around, but he was quite a nice fellow, and he used to show me photographs of his sisters. Now, you were not allowed to fraternize with prisoners, and I used to try and tell him, because I didn't speak Italian, that I was not allowed to speak to him. As I could have been in trouble. But anyway, I was on that farm, and I worked for a lot of the time on my own. Didn't see anybody young, couldn't go to the hostel where I'd asked to go. And it was there that I got married at that farm.
Oh, now, what chance did you have to meet a young man
all
this?
Well, he was a soldier that I had met, yes. He was in the army. And I met him, and July 1940, I'm just trying to think. Yes, July 1943, I actually got married.
Well, what were the rules about getting married when you were in the Women's Land Army?
There weren't any, actually. If you wanted to get married, you could. You didn't have to ask anybody or anything. If the farmer you thought it was all right, you still went on working on the farm, you see. And so there weren't any rules, and he was in the army anyway. And so I worked right there all the time until I was 7 months pregnant. And I tried to get my release, but couldn't, because they couldn't replace me. And so I got kicked out, actually, by a girl. She got her foot down my stool and kicked me out. And I said, well, that's it. I've got to come out of the Land Army. I'm not going to stay any longer. But I've got a card here, which I will tell you, which says, when you join the Land Army, you were given this. The undertaking which every volunteer signs on being accepted as a member of the Women's Land Army allows her to apply to her county secretary for permission to resign if circumstances arrive which make it difficult for her to keep her promise of service. she must not resign until this permission is received. I couldn't get permission to resign. And when it is received, she must return her uniform and badge to the County Land Army Office. And so eventually, I was able to come out. I'm just trying to think. My son was born in June, 26th of June, 1944. I came out of the accident in April, 1944. Yeah.
Was that not very difficult, you know, working when you were only 7 months pregnant?
Yes, it was, because it was heavy work, but I still did it. Because there was nobody else to take my place. And the farmer begged me not to leave. He lived in a farmhouse down the road, and his wife kept the chickens, and she worked like a horse. Definitely she worked like a horse. And I did everything on that farm. And now that I've, you know, had the reunions and met up with other people, and they've been all coming, I realised that I missed out a lot, because I wasn't in a hostel where they used to get picked up and taken to dances and things at night. And there were lots of them that they were out on the doing agricultural work in gangs, you see. It's when you're on a dairy farm, you're generally on your own or with not many people. But when you're on arable farms, big arable farms, and you're doing the agricultural side at home, you're with gangs. They used to go out on threshing gangs, which is a filthy job, threshing when it was time, because in those days, you see now, it's all done straight away. It's cut, it's threshed, it's put into great big bales of straw straight away. But in those days, the corn used to be cut, then it was scooped up for it to dry out. Then when it was dried out, it was put into a stack, which you had to make. And then, at a later date, the thresher came round, which was all by steam. A lot of them were by steam. And then all that had to be threshed. Well, that was all then full of dust. And those girls that were on the threshing gangs, they used to get covered in dust. And then it was thrashed. And then it used to go through a baler, separate, to be baled up or put into another straw. Jenny used to go into another straw stack. It was hay that used to be baled up separately. And it was a long process, because what happened, when we used to stook that corn up, sometimes it would pour with rain and it used to turn green. Whereas now it's all done straight away, so this doesn't happen. They could lose quite a lot of the straw, you see. It was very, very hard work on farms.
Would you have preferred that though, Iris? When you look back and you, or when you hear others, you know, you were with your cows and your dairying. Do you think you would have preferred being on an arable farm?
Yes, which I wanted to go on. But this person that interviewed me, you see, she was obviously told to push the dairy side, because people wouldn't volunteer because of the long hours. And she made it sound so romantic, didn't she? I mean, it wasn't romantic at all. And yes. I realise now, because I've met quite a lot of girls that were on that side of farming, and they had a much better time than I had. Some of them said it was the best time of their life. But I can't honestly say it was the best time of my life. I have a friend who lives up the road that was in the Land Army, and she was called up. You see, when if you were called up, you had a choice of either going to the service or going to the Land Army. She chose the Land Army. She was quite a bit older than me when she was called up. But she went to work for the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries. And so she was put onto a special farm where she got higher wages than I got and had much better conditions altogether. And she worked with a gang. And so that was my friend. Also, I would have liked to join, now I know I'll give you the particulars, of the Timber Corps.
Did you not know about that?
Not really at the time, no. Had they told me, I think I would have gone for this, because the Timber Corps were girls that they worked in forests, and a lot of them were cutting down trees because they used the props for soldiers for all sorts of things, you know, in the wood. and to make their barracks out of all made of wood, army hats. And they were doing all that, measuring up and all sorts of things, you know, and they were in gangs, and they were in like army hats themselves, where they were all billeted, where they were looked after, and if it poured with rain or anything, then they just did other jobs, so, you know, perhaps they would be in the sort of shearing off all the bark and things like this. But they had a much better time, and I've met several of those in the Timber Corps. And, you know, looking back, had I known about it, I would join the Timber Corps. But I didn't go back. But when we go to the Centre Tap, it is with the Land Army and the Timber Corps. We all meet up with them. Mm-hmm. They used to wear green berets. Mm-hmm. And so...
You know, at the end of the war, you know, when you did leave,
yes.
Did you finally get permission? You know, were you able to make contact and they gave you...
Yes, finally, because I said to them, you know, I said, look, I am 7 months pregnant, which you already know about, I've told you, and you have just got to find somebody else because I can't risk going on any longer like because the cowshed used to be slippery and everything, you see. And I said, I can't risk this. You've really got to let me go.
What were you given when you left? Did you have any sort of sum of money?
None of whatsoever. Nobody. We were not given anything whatsoever. And yet the members of the, you know, that had been on the air raid wardens and things, they were given a sum, and they were civilians. But the Land Army were not given a thing. And not even medals. But as I say, this last year we were allowed to apply, and I was able to have the defence medal because I used to go out on fire watching duties as well as the defence medal. But no, we were not given anything at all, and we were always treated really as outcasts. And when you think, we saved the country from starving, particularly the nappy, they wouldn't have had bread, milk, or anything in their nappies. And this is just an article that was written in the Weekend Daily Telegraph in 1994. And it says on the top, what did you do in the war, Granny? We associate Land Girls with the Second World War. But the first Women's Land Army was in fact formed in 1917. When it was apparently discovered that there was only a 3-week food supply left in the country. The first WLI was a far slimmer force than the vastly more organised one that succeeded it. Its numbers never rose above 23,000. By 1943, however, 90,000 women had enrolled in a highly trained force which quite literally kept a nation from starvation. The women were expected to take on all the jobs the men had done, from tractor driving to milking, from ploughing to hedge laying. It was a heroic, though largely unrewarded effort. When the Land Girl left the WLA, it was not disbanded till 1950. In actual fact, they were still recruiting girls until after 1950, because the men hadn't gone back to work on the farms. They either been killed, were wounded, or didn't want to go back. As many former farm workers declined to return to the land. She received neither medal nor demob pay. It was only in 1977, after years of campaigning on the part of the British Women's Land Army Army Society, that the WLA was finally allowed to send a representative to the annual Festival of Remembrance at London's Albert Hall. That is the only year that it's happened. What every Land Girl did receive, and many still treasure, is a letter from the patron of the WLA, then the Queen, now the Queen Mother. It read, your unsparing efforts at a time when the victory of our cause depended on the utmost use of the resources of our land have earned for you the country's gratitude.
And you obviously agree with all of that.
Well, of course, yes, I do. And it is only last year that we were told we could now claim one medal, in actual fact. One was the National Service Medal, And I got the defence medal because I did go out fire watching. But there are one or two girls, actually, that were at Dover, right on the very bad part on farms. They also got a special medal only last year because of, you know, they'd saved some soldiers as well. And one or two Langos actually got the George Medal for heroic behaviour. So, and yet, you see, we're still not recognised by the British Legion.
Does this mean that on Remembrance Day, you know, normally a Sunday,
yes.
Do you participate in the parade?
No, we're not allowed to. And this last November, for the first time, they allowed the ex-miners that were called up, the Bevin boys,